Blog Talk Radio.
Citizen Payne here. It's that time again. I'm Eric Citizen Payne, excuse me. Giving you my Facebook little name there. Yeah, it's that another day that we have to stay vigilant. This is K Sun and Friends. And it's going to turn down Bob a little bit. As we all know by now, we lost two, giants of the civil rights era of American history, of our history, two of our brothers that have always fought for us, spent their whole life, the generation of my father and my mother, that civil rights generation that took up the mantle, each generation pushing, and they certainly pushed. You know, I hear people talk about the greatest generation, and I don't doubt that that generation did great things and saved the world and all of the things that they say. But this being America, and we're supposed to be a democracy, I think it should be at least a consideration for a vote what was the greatest generation. Because if you were to ask me, people of my generation and beyond that came way after the contributions of the greatest generation, even our parents did, young African Americans, or we're old now, might want to vote for that civil rights generation to be the greatest generation, at least from our perspective. We at least like to put them in nomination for that, because ever since I was a boy, ever since my father was a boy, ever since Byron and Wayne's fathers were boys and their fathers before them, this is what we've been struggling for and fighting for. And so when you get an opportunity to hear these men, the first time I ever heard C.T. Vivian's voice was during one of those documentaries. As I tell a lot of people, I saw them when they came out the first time, when they were originally released, the documentaries that got the world excited and joined in the cause to help the black people here in America that were going through the events of the civil rights era of the 60s. It was C.T. Vivian, the first kind of image I remember on screen, because I remember he was so articulate and so pleading and so sincere when he brought the group to try and register to vote and walk up the stairs, and those police officers were blocking their entrance. And there was one, it wasn't Bull Connor, but there was another sheriff there, and eventually he ended up cracking CT in the mouth because he tried to plead with him. And still in that, with his mouth bleeding, I remember him saying, "You don't have to beat us." And this black man who was so articulate, so eloquent, and so peaceful and loving, even he spoke to the officers with him, pleading with them. So that's why, and I never knew who he was until later on. That was C.T. Vivian. Like John Lewis, blood, skin in the game. That garners respect. Met John Lewis. I don't even remember when I met him. I know it wasn't that long ago. I might have met him through my uncle. Met him a second time when he came to speak for my cousin at his annual black tie event last year. And I had been in his company a few times in D.C. One of my heroes. I wasn't brought up to idolize sports heroes. I mean, that happened as a result of osmosis, I guess. But the heroes I was introduced to, before I realized that heroes were living in my house, was my mother, my father, my uncle, but ones outside of the house were these men, these civil rights icons, men and women my father would tell me about and who they worked with. And so when I see these individuals of history, of the history that I know, that's when I get all, you know, wow, like turn into a little boy of fam that sees his hero. When I see these black men and women, movie stars, actors, and all that, that's great. That's wonderful. Sports heroes, that's wonderful. But these people, those were my heroes. Those were the ones when I see them, when I would get there in the D.C. and got a chance to be in the presence of John Lewis. We lost American heroes, you know, and it is great that he got to see the fruits of his labor. Imagine being 23 years old and speaking to that crowd with Dr. King. You know, you guys might have heard the story by now, but when he first met Dr. King, he was featured as a young preacher. And he said this story, he told this story when he spoke at my cousin's event. He said, when Dr. King first saw him, when he walked into the office, Dr. King said to him, "Are you the boy from Troy?" And I'm hearing John Lewis's cadence, the way he said it. And it was that Dr. King, like I said, had heard about him in a local newspaper as a young man. So from then on, that's how their relationship began. But this man, this gentle, giant, humble man, full of love, you could feel it. Not a coarse or evil bone in his body. You know, some people, you could just feel it off him. If you don't believe me, watch YouTube Dr. King on the Mike Douglas show 1 year. And there were three gentlemen on the show, three white gentlemen, Mike Douglas, and he had two guests. And the guests were kind of coming at Dr. King with a little bit of animosity and a slight aggression, at least one of them was. And Dr. King was explaining his positions. I don't know if it was on the war or on the issues of black people wanting just to be treated like human beings, like we want to be treated now, today. But all you saw was this being deflected just merely because Dr. King was so full of love. He was so full of no animosity, no aggression. And it chilled these guys out, where they chilled out and it became a discussion as opposed to kind of an adversarial debate almost. This is the same energy that John Lewis had. If any of you listening have been fortunate enough to be around him, you know, that's why people cried today on the House floor when they paid tribute to him. That's why the clerk who was reading the minutes, reading the bill, reading the resolution, got choked up even because this man. And so what we have to do, like he said, never give up. Never turn back. I'm paraphrasing now, but also a phrase comes to me now that my Jamaican friend told me, Jamaican-American brother told me, but also I think it's just a regular phrase. It's ever forward, ever, backward, never. And those people think that we're going to go backward and we're not going to honor our ancestors and men like these men. They got another thing coming, man. I hope they know, because we're bringing the thunder. I'm going to bring in the brothers here. Byron is first up, and what's up, Byron? How you doing?
Thank you, my brother. You know, many tears flowed from my eyes last week because both men, C.T. Vivian and Representative John Lewis, were personal civil rights mentors. They passed much information and torch to me when I was working with Hosea Williams at Metro Atlanta SCLC back in 1973, 74, 75. And I can only tell you, every time I met and was in the presence of C.T. Vivian, I was a sponge, because he was just that information. And you're right, a gentle man. Not a gentleman, a gentle man. And the information he was sharing with me was so much, because I went to Atlanta to feel and experience the civil rights movement firsthand. Elizabeth Omalami, Hosea Williams' daughter, and I went to Hampton, and she invited me. She came to Washington, D.C. Right after our graduation, or the summer before, and she said, "Byron, I need you to come to Atlanta, Georgia, and help me start a theater company with SCLC." I picked up my shoes and left D.C. with my new wife and relocated immediately to Atlanta, Georgia, where I spent the next 13, 14 years before I went to New York, and then another 7 years when I came back to Atlanta. But I can tell you, John Lewis was a personal friend and strong supporter of my theater company, Just Us Theater, in Atlanta, Georgia. And really, I helped him on his campaign. And yeah, the history, the spirit of the movement, and I can only tell you, and people who really don't understand this, Eric, it's not easy walking in the steps of the Prince of Peace.
That's right.
You understand what I just said? You have to have a special, special commitment to nonviolence mm-hmm. to walk that walk, because it's not easy to stand in the middle of hatred, in the middle of vitriol, and hold your ground, not with a weapon of mass destruction, but hold your ground with the weapon of the word of the Almighty and Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. That is what Southern Christian Leadership Conference is all about. And with C.T. Vivian, John Lewis, who people still don't know, SNCC, the Students Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, was the militant wing of SCLC, added the Food of Islam to the Nation of Islam. Y'all got to understand, we never rolled over and gave our cheek. We were always in the battle. And now is not the time to stop. You're supposed to get up and honor our ancestors who put the blood on the land. They did this for you. And people like Kanye West, who never has voted, has the audacity to disrespect Rosa Parks. Has the audacity to disrespect Harriet Tubman.
This is a lost young man. We have a lot of lost members of our community that, unfortunately, they are lost. They're brainwashed in some kind of capacity. I see people online saying things that are, they have big followings, and they got their little show, their little internet shows, and got people following them, and they are betraying their tribe. And I just wonder what goes on when they hear this man, when they hear the racist in chief talk about he's for the Confederate flag, when they talks about more white people are killed by police officers than black people, and all these bullshit facts that they try to throw up that they know that are not correct, and are just ways to twist and distort the truth. You know, also look at how life is, and I'm going to bring Wayne in a minute, because he is also part of these degrees of separation. You mentioned Afema. How do you pronounce her name again? Omalami.
Afema.
And look at her husband and how I met them, ended up meeting them doing Drop Squad in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So the degrees of separation, how we meet each other, that means we're all supposed to be together. Wayne also, and him and my mom, and I'm going to bring him on in a minute, but there's a reason for all of that. And you were in Atlanta in the heyday when it was hot.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
During when Andrew Young, I assume when Andrew Young might have been mayor. You know,
yes,
and so those were very, like the 80s were, and let's bring Wayne in, and during the time of WLIB, hot days, and people were keeping watch, like you guys were, Wayne Gilman. How you doing, Wayne?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen, and I don't even want to add to the pall, because it was a very disturbing moment to see both these leaders, you know, their lives ending just back-to-back in one weekend. But, you know, for the sake of not sounding too maudlin, I only met Lewis briefly, and Vivian I never met at all, but I had a chance to, you know, watch him from time to time. The one thing that I admired about both men, and I haven't heard a lot of this said or even heard it at all, you know, they spoke, you know, particularly Lewis was known for his oratorical skills, but he wasn't somebody who sought the attention as I used to see some other elements of the civil rights movement back then. You know, I'm just going to call it like it is. You know, not to say that there was anything wrong with drawing attention to oneself with what you were doing, but, you know, he wasn't like a Reverend Jesse Jackson or the late pastor of Canaan Baptist Church, who was Dr. King's right hand, Wyatt T. Walker. You know, my brain is going. And the thing is that these guys worked behind the scenes, and they were very dedicated to what it is that they were looking to achieve in this country. And I think that was the one thing that resonates with me. I also think of people like Powell, former Congressman Adam Powell, with all of his success. There was a little, you know, glitter, unnecessary glitter, for lack of a better expression, associated to some of these people who were in the movement. Even you mentioned SNCC and SCLC a moment ago. There was a sharp contrast between, and I'm ashamed to say, fellow Trinidadian Stokely Carmichael and a John Lewis. One of the reasons why Lewis dropped and went his way is because of the firebrand that the movement was beginning. You know, it was magic in a bottle. They were moving things to a level that needed to be moved, but the cohesion that we're seeing even more today than then, there was this divisiveness. You had Malcolm on one side, you had King on the other, you had Stokely, and then after that the Black Panthers, you know, and the Black Liberation Army, all those things, you know, during my embryonic years getting into the business I witnessed. But, you know, we're in a pivotal moment again now. And
yeah.
But I feel that there is more togetherness. And even if some of the characters who I just mentioned are still around, you know, to me, they don't even hold a candle to a John Lewis. John Lewis,
you know,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
I was just saying that he suffered, physically suffered. And you know, it just saddens me when I know we all have to go sometime, but we, on the heels of his death, Vivian, and then lastly Elijah Cummings, you know, I just hope with what's coming forward could maintain and sustain what these gentlemen brought to the table. Out in Chicago, we have Congressman Bobby, former
Rich.
Panther. Rich, yeah, and
Rush,
and the
Bobby
deal
Rush.
Is, yeah, Rush rather, and you know, these guys, they're in the twilight of their years, you know, but their contribution has been so meaningful, so sustaining, and we just gotta, you know, keep it moving forward. You know, you're right. I know the Jamaican phrase that you just cited.
Right.
I often hear it all the time, you know.
Yeah,
so,
I don't
you know.
Know.
It saddens me to see these guys go.
I've got a different perspective about the various different points of view and various different, you know, that just meant there were a lot of people that were in the movement to me. While they might not have agreed, I think there was more cohesion than you suggest. And they all recognize that we as a people need to move forward. Now, the wisdom in the approach. You know, you had the brothers that were more militant, the Panthers, Malcolm and such. But, you know, when you talk about it, Andrew Young just straight broke it. I don't know if it was Andrew Young. Someone just straight broke it down. The revolution that people might have wished in terms of straight let's just civil war it again was not going to be on our side, especially when you talk about a smaller percentage of the American population. You're not the dominant population. And also, too, certainly, if we look at nowadays, and also if you look back then, what they were willing to do to quell the riots, you know, and also looking at history, how even black people trying to be free in prosperous towns, how they were attacked and annihilated, in some cases, the towns wiped off the face of the earth. So the more militant, just let's go get our guns and make it happen, other than self-defense, probably when realized by Dr. King and others, was not going to work. And so you had to be strategic. I happened to catch Harriet last night. And as much as that, I'm sure they took 8 million liberties, as Hollywood is wont to do, she was strategic in how she did things. And so that's how you have to be. And also, when you consider we're not a monolithic group, obviously there's a great many opinions and thoughts about how to do things. Like, I mean, you know, when we talk about a difference of opinion or a lack of cohesion, I mean, all you got to do is look at W.E.B. Du Bois leaving the organization that he started, talking about the NAACP, because he felt that they weren't, you know, as aggressive as he wanted them to be. So I think that that it's a difference of approach. Some people, I mean, you know, we're not a monolithic group. Some people are going to be sellouts. I'm gonna break it down. We're going to have some sellouts in the crew. All you got to do is go online, and you can see how many sellouts we got. But still, we all benefit from the work that all of those people have done, as it amounted to a collective push, right? So those black Republicans that are now able to vote, guess what? You're able to vote because the work that John Lewis and them and others did before them back in the day. So you're able to vote and express your allegiance to individuals who are descendants or carrying on the same theory that was keeping your people from voting in the first place. Makes no sense. But, hey, that's just how it is, right? Human nature. So, you know, we got a lot of different folks. That even today, I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen some of these idiots online that are promoting these things. You mentioned Kanye, who was lost, and not to mention there's a whole generation that is lost. And I think it's that generation that suffered during the time of the crack epidemic, right? Because if you have parents like that getting hooked, just like the 70s, right, when we had the heroin issues, when they were pumping heroin into our community. You know, I mean, they have been doing the job that has been done on our people during the last 400 years, and as it pertains to keeping us down and keeping us oppressed in this country, is quite extensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Wayne, you guys had Frances Cress Welsing coming through the station often, how she broke it down in her book, that how we are attacked on all those various fronts. You know,
yeah,
as she quoted, entertainment, politics, social aspects, sports, all of these things that, you know, that they seem to layer in the racism to keep us down.
Well, it's a common thread. And the thing is that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, anyone, white, black, whether they're conservative, you know, whether they're part of the majority, the silent majority, or what have you, anyone looking at American culture has to acknowledge the contribution what the black community, regardless of where they're from, has contributed to the American society, to shape us who we are today. And yes, we've gone through all sorts of pain. We've gone through all sorts of decadence. You know, you mentioned the crack epidemic. You mentioned the cocaine, heroin epidemic. All that stuff is tied to, you know, destroying neighborhoods so developers could come in and redevelop areas and act like as if they're Christopher Columbus and discovered something that had been there all along but never gave the people who were there an opportunity before to keep their properties insured or to have the economy that they work for themselves. Thank God we're at an era now where we have people who are making bank, like Oprah Winfrey, LeBron James is giving back, a Michael Jordan, you know, but we still have to be patient with those brothers and sisters who haven't gotten the message yet. We have to help each other. It's the only way we're going to get respect out here. And it saddens me. And I understand your point about, you know, yes, we're not a monolith, but, you know, very often I spend a lot of my time, whether I was a cub reporter or a news director, having to attend meetings and hear differences between members of the black Liberation Army and the Panthers, the group out of Brooklyn that Sonny Carson led and had issues with Al. You know, I remember just the Nation of Islam. And I'm not trying to get off the point. I'm just saying, we bring so much to the table if we could just, you know, get it together and respect
each
other. Yeah,
I don't think that's the point, though, Wayne. That's what I was addressing. I don't think that's the point. And I don't really think that's a part of the problem. But to suggest that we just can't get it together is not.
Oh no, I'm not saying that we can't.
I would have to disagree with that kind of appeal. I think there's things that are better.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying, having lived through that, having spent
mm-hmm.
hours at different meetings and hearing the back
yeah.
and forth, and it was always this conclusion at some point, we're all trying to get to that Mecca, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We may have different modalities of getting there, and you know, there are times when I get highly critical of this group, the millennials that are out now, but I think in many ways, you know, progress has been made. Even John Lewis said that himself.
Of course it's been made. People aren't still walking
you know.
Around slaves and they're not getting hung at will as much.
And I agree with you, Al,
where people want to make that like no progress has been made because obviously, you know, like you just said, John Lewis talked about it in a speech. If you think no progress has been made, walk in my shoes, you know. And
yeah.
I've noticed that. And my mother even mentioned, you know, when Ron Karanga and they had a big event here in Jersey, the Black Panthers and another group, they had beefs because you remember a lot of them cats used to be gang members before they were Panthers.
Yeah,
so there was
exactly.
that whole thing. There was that whole beef that had to be worked out. And you know, a lot of times, you know, and I know I've experienced the same thing. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's personalities, right? Not everybody's
mm-hmm.
gonna be down for the people. Some people are gonna be down for the people, and then we get into certain positions. And they start liking that a little bit. They start thinking it's
yeah.
about them, right? They start liking
yeah.
like a lot. Like if you watch Malcolm X, the scene where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad tells Malcolm, "Watch," and I'm paraphrasing, but you got to watch those cameras. They are like the
mm-hmm.
strongest narcotic. If you get too used to too much liking
yeah.
your picture and those cameras being around, that will be your downfall. And you lose that.
Hey,
some
brother,
people,
there's a name I want to call right now, man. You ain't, but, you know, he's still my brother. I ain't going to put him out there. And maybe you all have already read my mind by now, but you're right. The camera, you know?
Yeah, well, some
and
people
we,
are like that, but also
to,
there's a certain amount of work. Excuse me. There's also a certain amount of work, a certain amount of good, excuse me, that comes from that, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
also why the brothers were jealous of Malcolm. Because he was so charismatic, then the cameras started to come around, and maybe, you know, Rev, being that dude that he was back in the day, if that puts him in the position that he's in today, where he can be the bullhorn, even though we all see it's a, you know, still in front,
mm-hmm.
still out front, but if that helps to bring attention, if that helps to
oh, yeah.
awake even more young people, then I'm
mm-hmm.
cool with it. I can accept all the other BS because I know what he's trying to do, even though we all know that there's some areas there, but we know overall where this brother is trying to get us to is that objective
mm-hmm.
and that place we're all trying to get to. So, you know, I totally understand, and that those are the issues that we need to work out as a people before we could really, as we make progress. I don't want to say before, but as we learn from before, from the past, what we need to do. And there's some other points we need to do, too. We need to really stress, go back to kind of a, I don't want to say a stricter lifestyle or a stricter perspective, but it seems now, I mean, these days, in the past, the events of the last year and just during the Trump administration has caused this younger generation now to wake up a little bit, right? And even
no.
my generation to wake up a little bit more, right, to say, okay, we need to push a little bit more. We need to push out because now you have that next generation of racists. You know, I'm talking about the Tom Cottons. I'm talking about, you know, cats of that age, Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a couple of those cats that are in the administration now, the Steve Millers, the Ken Cugliato, or whatever, Ken Cuccinelli from was the Secretary of State in Virginia, the Republican one that was real restrictive and trying to restrict voting rights, And also these individuals, mm-hmm. this guy now who thinks it's okay to send in Border Patrol guards in Seattle, like secret police snatching people off the ground. So there's a whole other generation. That's why we have to be ever vigilant, because even as Mitch McConnell put out the nice words about John McCain, he's still holding up that bill to be signed, the voting rights bill, because they're trying
right.
to dismantle and bring us back. They're always trying. That's why I say Democrats, 30-year plan, not an 8-year plan. Every time we do something, use some of the enemy's tactics that are working. That's a smart thing to do. You know, if they're always driving home one point where everybody that supports them has that at least that one talking point, we need to do the same thing. Instead of letting it be low-key, that's my biggest problem with Obama, was that he didn't want to tout what they were doing enough. Didn't want to respond to the negative stuff. And sometimes you allow them to create the narrative. And we understand that how the walk he had, that he chose to walk and try to be everybody's president. But sometimes you got to be a little bit more extreme and radical. It's like people tell you that's negotiating one-on-one, right? Ask for way more than you know you're going to get, because they're going to come back with an offer that's going to be way low. So somewhere you'll meet in the middle. You know?
No, I hear what you're saying, but I also feel to a certain extent, you know, it was a tremendous weight. When history looks back, and I think there's no dispute amongst the three of us, when history looks back and juxtapose Barack Obama to Donald Trump, it is going to be like night and day. You know, anyone who witnessed snippets of the Chris Wallace interview this past weekend, you know, is further validation of the level of incompetency that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And that, mm-hmm. you know, I was attending a meeting the other day with Chuck Schumer, and I heard people talk about all these lives that are dying, and that there should be a price that he should pay for that, because he has not done a damn thing about this pandemic other than run his mouth and berate people who are knowledgeable and send out mixed signals. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, Barack did the best he could. He had a Republican Congress that basically was like a wall that you could not penetrate, but so far. And to me, I just think technically where I'm in agreement with you, that there are times when I don't understand where the Democrats will just lay down and accept something like Al Gore, who clearly should have been president of the United States, and not George W. Bush. You know, the evidence was there. You know, and I'm waiting to see, because he's already said during this interview that I'm going to take a minute to evaluate what the outcome of the election will be. And
yeah,
if it's time
yeah.
for me to walk out, you know, I mean, just to, can
yeah.
you imagine?
I want to talk, I want to,
you know,
before we get off into that, hold on. Before we get
yeah,
off
yeah,
into
yeah.
that, I want to really take a time to dig into that for a minute. But I want to get Byron in here again, because I want to get back to John Lewis and C.T. Vivian. And Byron, I want you to talk a little bit about what Atlanta was like in those days, because you were down there. Actually, before.
Okay.
It sounds like your timing was actually before John Lewis actually ran for Congress, and then you were down there
That's right. He
was in his first couple of terms. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Wayne, I want to just reaffirm your faith and belief in the strength of our current black leaders. We don't get the media. So it's made to look like we don't have leadership, number one.
No, you're right.
Number two, you have to understand the associates like Wyatt T. Walker and C.T. Vivian and John Lewis and Jesse Jackson and Wyatt T. Walker, all of them, if you understood the walk of the Christian ministers who were part of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And the reason why I reinforce the name is because each and every one of them were like the apostles to Christ. Each and every one of them had a specific reason why they were chosen to walk with and be administratively associated with SCLC. Wyatt T. Walker was like the historian because he was frontline taking those notes. The piece, when they went into a town, and this is what you got to understand, when there was a protest scheduled, before they walked into that town, Hosea was John the Baptist. He was Martin's Castro, as he called him. Just like Reverend Al, yes, you cannot and dislike Reverend Al because his job was to make you not like him. He is the modern-day version of John the Baptist. Remember, John the Baptist had his head taken off as a birthday present because he was stirring up the crowds against whoever was in charge. Bathsheba said, I want his head for my birthday. Come on now.
I hear
we
you.
Can't, you see, because each one of our heroes and sheroes and ancestors who put their life on the line has had a singularity purpose as part of the movement. Now, you asked that question, what was it like? I crisscrossed the entire state with Hosea Williams when he was running for U.S. Senator against Sam Nunn. Okay? And I went into those small towns with him, and I saw and experienced why SCLC left a footprint in each and one of those towns and what significant an impact it had on the movement in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Georgia. Those states were reflections of the mission that these men and spiritually driven women of the civil rights movement put their life on the line following that prescript called the Prince of Peace. If you don't acknowledge that, you will never understand the movement from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference perspective. John Lewis was in a pitched battle with Julian Bond. Julian Bond was the anointed one from the movement.
Yeah.
He went and was barred from his election result as the state representative in the state Senate because of racism. He was part of the Maynard Jackson movement, the pretty boy.
I'm glad you brought that out because I was just going to go there a moment ago. Preach on it, brother. You
and
know,
because
it.
The friendship never left between the two men. When John Lewis beat Julian Bond for that 5th Congressional House seat, it was a bitter contest. But they never dropped their friendships because it was born in the blood, in the spirituality of both of these men putting their life on the line, and it wasn't about a contest of pretty boy versus another individual. Never was that. For those who wanted to go down that road, it was there for you to take it. But they never, ever left their friendship and their reasons and cause for being. They always brought it to the table, and when they left the room, they still maintained the integrity of their friendship because it was more about the movement. That's what America has not been privy to. We don't teach it. I had a beautiful conversation with Liz Omalami yesterday. It was a long conversation because I needed to hear that voice. When you're part of the movement, you have to understand you have severed your relationships with your oppressor. It is the bondage that you have been able to release because you went to the Underground Railroad stops along the way, so that when I went through Sandersville and Washington and all the counties of where Montezuma, Georgia, and Attapulcas, Georgia, places you've never heard of, but I went to those places and I saw how the people never, ever forgot the footprint left by the civil rights movement. It still is there. It's in the blood, in the soil. So if people think that this is something new or that we're just all of a sudden becoming woke, we've been woke for 402 years. And there's proof of it, because in every one of those 402 years, there have been African-American men and women who have never stopped fighting for freedom.
That's right.
You don't know their names because they're foot soldiers, and foot soldiers did the grunt work.
Exactly.
Martin never wanted to be the leader. He wrote about it in the Drum Major Instinct, and it's because if you are chosen, the people will push you forward because you speak truth.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want any magic or surprises or promises. That we want truth. We can accept our fate, but if you lie to us, you're disrespecting us, and you're really challenging our intellectual need for truth. With truth, we can conquer anything.
That's right.
I won't let this period go by with my voice being silent. I'm going to bring it. My mission, the baton that John Lewis passed on to me, and C.T. Vivian passed on to me, and Hosea Williams passed on to me, and Andy Young, and Jesse Jackson, and Wyatt T. Walker. I got a moral responsibility to the people that I represent. And I do it because it's love.
It's your people. You know, Wyatt T. Walker was often, I know my mom interviewed him a couple times at the station, Wayne, if I remember correctly. I know she would talk about him because she would always talk about, try to find people who could be related, but he did look like someone in the family. But you know, that was part of that kind of lineage. I mean, you know, and it's, I'm glad you talked about the foot soldiers, Byron, because, you know, a lot of times people talk about the standouts in history, you know, but there's a lot of people like, you know, I was born in the city of activists, in the turbulent time of the 60s, right in the middle of it. Yeah. You know, I was fortunate enough to grow up with my father and uncle with Amiri Baraka. Shirley Chisholm came to my house for a fundraiser for my uncle. Like I said before, these are the people that I was taught about when I was a kid, you know. So, I tell people, the only thing that's been more in my life than acting or entertainment is civil rights activism, because that's what it was. I mean, you know, we spent time as children passing out flyers, being active, doing things like that, you know. And then my uncle took his place in history, with working with people like Congressman Lewis and Congressman Conyers, you know. We forget about these great. I mean, we look at the shortcomings and, you know, how they forced John Conyers out of office, but we forget the good he did for our people and how he pushed the ball forward. That's what we're talking about. Pushing things forward.
Right.
As we get these last couple of minutes in, nobody, everybody knows in this area that WLIB Radio, Inner City Broadcasting, was the voice for our community. Bottom line, I mean, WWRL, there are other stations, but the main go-to was WLIB, perhaps because BLS was the sister station, whatever. But when we were that during those times that Wayne and you guys were there and producing all of these shows that kept the community aware and that told the community about the innocence of the exonerated five. How ironic that is, that here we are now, that the very man who called for their death is the one who was really guilty, you know. And that brings me to what he said in that interview that you were referring to, Wayne, when he also said, when he said he didn't know if he would accept the results of the, it's not up to him to accept the results of the campaign of presidency. That's ironic, but the bigger thing is what he said in a press conference earlier today, when they asked him about the troops that he sent into Seattle, and he's talking about doing that in other cities, that he said that Democrats are running badly. Talking about New York, he might do it in New York.
Right,
he might,
New York.
Might do it in Chicago. So all of these areas that he talked about are Democratic cities, are places that didn't vote for him in the last election and would never vote for him. I What I see is this guy trying to create a situation where there is chaos, right? That's why he's sending these troops in there, to antagonize the protesters, to try to get them, to bait them. And then creating that chaos, he'll have a reason, I think, to declare martial law and say we're going to have to postpone the election. Why else is he making these moves? We've got to look at the big picture. This man is dangerous. His very family members said that. And if you listen to the whole interview he did with Rachel, they're despicable in how they treated her and her brother and their baby nephew, an infant that needed their help. And what did they do? They turned their back on their own blood, newborn baby, to carry on their family name. They turned their back on. This is who these people are. His own sister said he's a clown. So we have to be ever vigilant, because this man will stop at nothing. He is one of the most dangerous people to come along and infect, like a virus, our country. Go ahead, you were going to say.
Well, as long as this is a democracy, there are laws in place to put his ass in check, as far as I'm concerned. He should not get away with anything. What he got away with out there is one thing. He should not be getting away with it. I believe all these little smear tactics on Fifth Avenue in front of Bed-Stuy Restoration up in Harlem, smearing Black Lives Matter, I think he's got a role in that too. I think he's paying somebody just to come out there and do things just to stir the pot. And I believe the needle is going to rise between now and November when the election is taking place. But, you know, if it is a landslide, and I want it so bad, I pray that, you know, the early voting through mail and that people going to the polls, even if you go out there and vote twice, three times, it's got to be a landslide. I'm saying that as a joke. I'm not advocating that. But the bottom line is that this man needs to be replaced. You know,
right.
he's bringing this country down. He doesn't care anything but other than himself, not even his family. And I think there is clearly a reason to question his competency. Anyone listening to that interview with Chris Wallace, you know, it to me, there's clear evidence. So many times he's come out and said things that just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, we can't afford to let this just go by and that's it. It just saddens me to see what goes on, that we have to deal with this, you know?
Right.
And he's used the pandemic, you know, in many ways. He condemns, you know, the Chinese government for this being out there, you know, but the bottom line is I think he saw an opportunity with this, you know?
Of course.
Let the whole world be.
That's what they say about the stock market, right?
Yes.
Whenever there's calamity in the stock market, there's always an opportunity for somebody, right?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
That's what they're hoping. As each chaos flips, that's what I'm saying. That's why they're hoping it flips, you know, okay, well, it's falling out this way. How can we best take advantage of this? If we just tweak this over here, that's why they wanted to go, oh, send all the information to us instead of the CDC. And then we could, you know, hide the information or do whatever, or bastardize it or make it up as they go. Now he wants to start doing the daily briefings again, right? That's the latest thing.
Notoriety.
They're starting to doing the briefings again. And people don't know. See, that's going to be his downfall, and that's what people are trying to say. That's how your approval rating went down in the first place. That's what other Republicans are trying to say to a certain degree. So let's hope that his arrogance – let's not hope. Let's make sure that his arrogance, and let's make sure that they lose the election. Let's not hope. It's almost like there's so many of them doing so much crime. Y'all was thinking about this earlier today. We need to put a tail on these dudes. You know? We need to have someone following these people all the time, because they cannot be trusted. And their objective is to turn the presidency, and they've already done it, into a criminal organization. They've already done that. And I'm not saying that maybe the presidency has been used in those purposes before by a great many other. That's why it's presidents. Not quite like this at all. Not like this since maybe in the 1900s, right? when black people were just getting hung indiscriminately. Not like this, but I'll tell you what, just about all of them have been on that tip one way or another. They might have been polite racists like Ronald Reagan. Ain't going to tell you what they think in your face, but when they get together, they're going to try to come up with as many programs and plots and theories and plans to still keep us in this position that we've been in and to make sure we never get out. So at least with these people that he's unleashed, we see them coming. But we got to understand all the people that he's putting in place and all this. Every time you see some of these talking heads and some of these reporters on TV and some of the stuff they say, well, I don't know how, or maybe he misspoke, and maybe it's
thing.
They can't editorialize and say he lied there. But when he lies, and it's factual, you can say that he told them that he didn't tell the truth. I guess what they want to say, we don't know his intent, so we don't know if he intended to lie. But if he said something 5 minutes ago and 5 minutes later in the course of the same conversation contradicts himself, I think we might be able to draw the conclusion that this man is a liar, at the very least that he's full of caca. Okay?
That's the thing. I know we all give Fox News, a beating up periodically whenever we have an opportunity to talk about them. But I have to say there is a distinction between the news department and their regular programming. And Chris Wallace came with his fact check book yesterday. You know, he checked them on anything that would be – and that's what we need to do. We need a responsible press, you know.
And it
applies to the black press as well. You hear something, call it. Just like Lewis said, call it.
I can't agree with you even more, Wayne, and because you know each of our shows, I give you the POTUS death clock. It was your recommendation. We should have one. Well, here it is, July 20th. July 20th, 2020. As of today, and the figures that I give you always are updated by the morning, and so they're already past the numbers I give you. So as of today, July 2020, the infected in the United States is 3,834,208, and by count of 77,000 added yesterday alone, 77,000. So by the end of this month, we will be up over 4 million people infected in our country.
And that's
Think
a third of
that.
The populace, right? About a third or
3%. And how many dead right now, as of today? 142,601. How many unemployed?
He needs to go to jail for that.
Over 51 million people are unemployed in this country as of this moment today in Washington, D.C. The infected is 11,339, 579 dead as of today. In New York City, infected 218,478 and counting, and the dead 23,411. Not New York State, New York City, our financial capital, has a viral infection killing people. So the overwhelming putrid, the stench of corruption, the collusion, the cronyism has engulfed the Oval Office, and it's time to take a deep breath. My people, hold your nose, run in, and you're going to like this one, guys. Flush the turds November 3rd.
Flush the turd November 3rd. Let's start posting that.
Hey, man, you better call me right there.
That's like, wait for it. But that's the danger our country is in, and now they want to put children out there. And I said this last week. I'm saying it again. You want our country open back up, Mr. POTUS? Then open up the White House. Take the fences down, open it up to the public, and stop hiding behind that shield which you think is going to protect you. Open the public back up to the House, back up to the Capitol, and then we might consider putting our children out there so you want to use them as shields for your election campaign, and they will be dead children in our streets, in our schools,
that's what
in
he
our
wants.
Neighborhood.
Yeah, and let the, you know, that a big thing would be, because I'm sure they canceled the White House tours, open the White House back up for the tours. You want to, you know, just like you said, if you want the kids to go to school, open the White House back up for the tours to the public.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you.
This is, I mean, this is a situation where it calls for all hands on deck. Really briefly before we go, because we've got about another 5 minutes. Even, you know, the sports are coming back, but I'm sure you guys heard that a number of NFL players are like, hey, the NFL has not let us go, know what's going on, and if they don't get it together, there's going to be no football season. And I don't think there should be any seasons at all. They don't know what's going on. But also, too, I think the athletes, I understand everybody's got to get paid and people have jobs, so there's a lot of considerations there. And you know, we've always talked about how we understand people have to weigh and balance out how they need to support their family is how they want to risk their exposure to the virus. That's all understood all across America. The fact that when other people try to make it an issue, a cultural issue like it's us against them, that's why we keep ending up back here. And it's also, I believe, an opportunity for these brothers to really make a statement because so much money in America thrives on the sports entertainment that these brothers create. That they have a real that there's a real opportunity to say this is what we want, this is what we demand if you want to see our talents. Real briefly, I just want to know what you guys want to think about that as we go to just under 4 minutes.
I like the fact that the colleges are leading the way for common sense, shutting down their entire season of football, shut down the athletic competition, period. And you know what? If they can do that, and you know the college contract ends with the big CBS college national championship. So it's like we're talking billions of dollars that are spread across the school boards. And let me tell you, the Big Ten are only playing Big Ten schools. They're not going out of conference. The Ivy League schools have shut down their athletic programs for the fall and mostly most of the spring. So pay attention, America. You don't have to listen to the nonsense of people who are ignorant. Follow the science. Follow the medical advice being given to us, because at the end of the day, it is our children that we are putting in front of making money. They are not slaves to the economy. None of us are.
But they're trying to use our slave labor. What do
you
think, Wayne?
No, I happen to have to agree with Byron on that. I mean, the thing is, you know, the sports, you know, we all miss sports. I mean, just yesterday the Yankees played the Mets. They had the, you know, what used to be the mayor's contest between the teams. And maybe there's not that much physical contact between baseball players, but when you compare what football players and basketball players go through, to me, that's a petri dish for spreading the virus, you know? And at some point, you got to decide what makes sense. I don't see kids going back to school in September. I think until they come up with an adequate vaccine and get these numbers down, America is still, you know, in this divisive state where, you know, right here in New York, you go to restaurants, out in Queens, there was a big party in Long Beach, Long Island.
Yeah,
last night.
So we're not ready. And certainly as it goes to public events, as sporting events, we got to go. You guys might want to give your send off. We got caught up talking about this stuff and time flew. I want to say condolences to my sister's friend Esther, the federal judge whose son was murdered, and her husband is in critical condition. So we're asking everybody to say prayers for him. She was a law school classmate of. She is a law school classmate of my sister's. So we're all sending out our prayers. You guys want to give the people your sign off really quickly? Wayne, tell the people what
I just want to say. You know, keep hope alive, and we need to examine that story you just talked about because there's a racism component that, right. that motivated this guy to shoot them. Yeah.
We will. Also, thanks. All right,
she's
Wayne.
She's the judge. Also, she's the judge for the Epstein case. So there is a connection.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Here's my send off. Flush the turds. Vote November 3rd. Flush the turds. November 3rd.
All right. We'll talk to everybody again another time. Talk to your brothers later. All right. This is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Eric Payne, Kay's Son. And we want to thank the Lord for John Lewis and C.T. Vivian. We'll talk to you soon.
We can ride anywhere we want to.